This is Mark Langdon's Bets Club.
Hello and a warm welcome to Mark Langdon's Bets Club, your one-stop shop for football betting insight. The World Cup is nearing the end and we've got you covered from every angle for the next two games. As well as that, there's EFL action to look at. Dan Childs will join us later on in the show. Mark, great to be joined by yourself once again. It's been another exciting week of World Cup action. We're recording on a day where there's actually a little break for us to catch our breaths and review what's gone on, take a look at what's ahead. What have been the big standout moments for you over the past 7 days?
Well, we might as well sort of get to the elephant in the room straight away. I mean, Germany's exit wasn't great news for me. Obviously, they were out before some people have listened to the Bets Club last week. I mean, they did their part of the bargain, didn't they, really, in terms of winning by two goals. Didn't see Japan beating Spain, but I suppose that's the way it goes, isn't it? Sometimes in football, it was about an inch, wasn't it? Probably not even that.
It was a remarkable evening. I think that was probably my favourite night of the World Cup so far. I suspect you've got slightly differing opinions.
I enjoyed it.
In certain places, but it was, at one point it was Japan and Costa Rica going through, wasn't it?
It was, yeah. I mean, it was still thrilling. I think even though it didn't sort of fall the right way, it was very exciting. And then, for a 0-0 game, I was really, I suppose, excited by Morocco against Spain. There wasn't many shots on target. I think Spain only had one in the 120 minutes, but I don't know if it was the Moroccan crowd that sort of made it feel sort of more exciting than it was, but it did feel edge of the seat stuff at times. But as far as Spain go, you know, they're a team that's close to being very good, but you look back at this World Cup and go, well, they've only beaten Costa Rica and they've got a lot of talent in midfield. But particularly up front, you just never feel like they're going to score enough goals. And I know that sounds silly considering they scored 7 against Costa Rica. But in the other games, it was very one-dimensional, wasn't it? You know, like pass, pass, pass. And until they sort out that striking situation, they always run the risk of being taken to extra time and penalties. And you know, in a knockout situation, if you're having to go through too many of them, you know, just the way that sort of the cookie crumbles, you're going to lose some of them. So I think until they sort out that striking situation, might not be a team that I can trust sort of going forward in international tournaments. On Germany, on the other hand, obviously they've got the home Euros coming up. I mean, I don't think they did a lot wrong. They were massively punished for any errors that they made. And they just, in front of goal, were very wasteful. Was it 24 shots on target, 50-odd shots in total? I mean, Musiala could have had about 3 or 4 himself. Mm. In fact, he scored none, was very annoying because I was on him to be top German scorer and he kind of played well enough. He got into enough good chances to do it. I was backing him in first goal scorers as well in all the games, sort of, or to, you know, any time. And I mean, he could have scored. I think he could have scored in all three matches.
Oh,
absolutely. Hit post twice against Costa Rica, didn't he? I mean, he's such a special talent. It's a shame he's not playing in the, you know, in these latter stages. But you know, you've got to be efficient in front of goal, because if you're not, you're going out. And that's the fascinating thing about international tournaments. We always make such sweeping judgments on the back of what might have just been unlucky or a lucky roll of the ball in the case of, you know, if you think that Germany game, I mean, if the ball rolls one more sort of quarter rotation, Germany might still be in the World Cup. And everyone thinking Japan have not had a good one. Instead, Japan go home like heroes, you know?
Such fine margins. Just a quick word from me on Morocco. I'm sick and tired of kind of the entitlement around certain people moaning about, oh, Morocco didn't give it a go and it was a disgrace of football. It's like, well, what do you expect them to do? Sort of go all out attack, like South Korea did against Brazil. I mean, we all saw what happened there. I mean, I just don't understand. Like, there's different ways to play football. And for them on the night, it worked beautifully. It was a well-executed game plan. Yes, it might have not been the most exciting for some to watch, but I thought they defended brilliantly. And there's an art as much to defending as there is attacking, in my opinion.
Yeah, and I mean, why would you do anything different against
exactly?
Spain? I mean, yeah. I mean, I would say even, I don't know, maybe even if they played like a Argentina or a sort of Netherlands, possibly even England, I think would step back against them and France. I mean, you know, you just you wait for the opportunities to come against Spain. You've got no God-given right that you've got to attack them so they can hit you on the counter attack and play through. A defence that's not marshalled properly. No, you do what you got to do to win games. And Morocco were, what, 300-1 at the start of the tournament? I mean, it's the onus is definitely not on them in any match to attack. And I think that might worry Portugal, actually, because in recent years, Portugal have tended to struggle against teams that sit back against them, even in qualifying, like, you know, some real, what you, I suppose, classes like minnow type teams. They've not always been able to put them away.
Absolutely. We've got four quarterfinals to preview. We'll get onto them now. And we'll start with France against England. My goodness. Saturday, 7 o'clock, 7-5 France, 2-1 England, 9-4 the draw. Mark, this is a tantalizing clash, this one.
Yeah, perfect kickoff time for it. Yeah. I'm just imagining if this was in the summer, because the quarterfinals would normally be early July, wouldn't they? It's normally, I think, Coral Eclipse Day that quarterfinals of the World Cup are. It would be absolute bedlam on the streets of pubs and beer gardens of England. If it was in the summer, I think this is the game really that will ignite the nation, because I still don't feel like there's World Cup fever. We're getting there after that Senegal.
It's bubbling, isn't it? It's bubbling nicely. Yeah,
it is. But it kind of, I suppose, needs that big result. You know, like, wow. You know, it's a bit like in the Euros, wasn't it, when England beat Germany, and then that was it.
Yeah.
Kind of it really just ignited the whole crowd. And I obviously, if England were to beat France, then it would do the same, I think, again ahead of, you know, what would be the semi-final. You know, France are the holders. They've got the best player in the tournament, probably, in Mbappe. They've got the top scorer in Mbappe. You know, they're neighbouring countries as well. A lot of crossover in terms of players that have played in or, you know, are playing in the Premier League. So I think it's got absolutely everything between two teams that have looked good so far. So really looking forward to it. This should be an absolute belter. And unlike some of those last 16 games, you know, where they were a bit one-sided, weren't they, really, on paper, this looks about as close as the betting suggests, I think.
I really enjoyed hearing Kyle Walker speak with his kind of media day. I think it was yesterday or today, and he was bullish, and I like that from England players. I think he said something along the lines of, he's not going to roll out a red carpet for Mbappe. You know, this is his time to shine for his country. And I think if England want to progress and get past France, who we all know are superb and have done the business in tournaments before, they will need to get a bit nasty at times. And I don't think I've heard that enough from England in recent years. So that pleased me, Mark.
Yeah, I mean, you know, Walker in this game will have to be physical up against Mbappe, because if Mbappe gets the run on him, he's going to go past him, even as quick as Kyle Walker is. You know, that's just how it's going to be. I think the interesting sort of aspect here is, do England go to the back three? And so is Kyle Walker sort of literally one-on-one with Mbappe, like he would be if he was the right back? Or are England going to double up and play a back three and sort of have that extra cover with Walker inside a Trippier or Alexander-Arnold? My personal belief is that England shouldn't switch to a back three. I think they should trust Walker to go one-on-one with Mbappe, because it's all well and good moving to a back three, but you lose something elsewhere. So you either have to sacrifice a forward or a midfielder. And I don't like either of those options, really. You know, if we're talking from an England fan point of view, because you either leave yourself outnumbered in midfield or you're taking away one of the biggest strengths if you don't play Saka or Foden with Kane. So I think you have to fight fire with fire. And one of the ways to keep Mbappe off the ball and away from your goal is to attack France and be on the front foot against them and control the game. So it's a big decision for Gareth Southgate. If it goes wrong, he'll be blamed for it. That's just the life of being a manager, particularly the England manager. This is sort of where I expected England's World Cup bid to end. You know, before the tournament, always felt like it was lining up to be France against England. I was hoping it was going to be Denmark, but you know, you assumed it would be France against England. From an England fan point of view, I would say that France are the favourites to win the game, actually. Not only from a fan point of view, I think from a betting point of view as well, just totally neutral. But there's not much in it.
You know, all the concentration and the headlines have been surrounding Mbappe, and you can see why he's been superb all season and in this tournament. I think it was Rio Ferdinand saying, like, France have a lot to be scared of as well. You know, if they can stop Kane, then how do they stop Saka? If they stop Saka, how do they stop Foden? You've got Bellingham, who's been one of the standout stars in the tournament so far. France will be fearful going into this as well.
I would have thought so, yeah. Probably less so than England, because they are the World Cup holders and they've kind of proven themselves. And England have reached a certain level and just not been able to go beyond that. And that would be the big thing for me from, you know, can Foden, Saka and Kane and Bellingham play, express themselves essentially and play on the front foot? Because we saw in that Euros final against Italy, I mean, it was a wonderful opportunity. You scored after a couple of minutes. You know, you're at home. Crowd's going absolutely wild. Italy weren't offering that much in the first half. And then England just went backwards and backwards. And in the end, you know, they were the team sort of holding on for penalties. And Gareth Southgate was unable to stem the flow and to change the game with his substitutions. And you know, I think that this could well go to 120 minutes. And I think I'd like to see Southgate be more proactive on the bench. And you know, you're talking there about taking it to France and for France to be worried. That you know, that's where I think the subs have got a big part to play. When do you release Rashford and Grealish and any of the other sort of top players that England have got waiting in the wings? Because I have felt at times before Southgate has sat on his hands for too long, and I don't want him to do that against France. I think he needs to go for it a bit and needs to be bold, not in Kevin Keegan style, but you don't want to see the Southgate style either of, you know, well, let's just hope we don't lose. Yes. You know, I think there's more to, if England are to win, I think it will be sort of getting at France's weakness, because I don't see them stopping Mbappe for 120 minutes. He's too good. And that no matter how sort of detailed your plan is, at some stage he will do something spectacular.
Yeah, I echo those thoughts. It feels like a big opportunity for Southgate to maybe just silence some of those critics who said he hasn't been proactive enough in the big moments. Mark, it's an incredible game. I'm getting slightly nervy for it already. What's your bet going to be for this?
Well, I think that the 90-minute draw is the way to go. It's the biggest price of the three outcomes, and I think it's as likely as anything here. I agree that France are the slight favourites. They haven't kept a clean sheet in this tournament so far, whereas England have managed three. So I think that's a good thing for England, but they haven't come up against Kylian Mbappe so far. So, you know, it's one thing keeping a half-fit Gareth Bale quiet, another thing of, you know, Mbappe in full flow. To me, this is a game almost, you could almost go sort of Mbappe, the individual sort of stardom of him against a better team cohesion that I think England have got in the final third. And like I say, I think we might be heading for 120 minutes, possibly even penalties, but the 90-minute draw is the way I'd go.
Could be a nervy evening on Saturday then. Let's move on to the next game we'll be previewing in. It's Brazil against Croatia. Croatia 8-1, Brazil 4-11, 4-1 the draw. This one Friday, 3 p.m, the first of the quarterfinals. We all know the strength that Brazil carry, Mark, and I mean the depth is quite simply a joke. They may be flattered to kind of deceive in a few of those opening games, but against South Korea, they looked the real deal. What do you make of this game going up against Croatia?
Yeah, Brazil should win as the odds suggest. I think it'll be a very different game though to what we saw from Brazil against South Korea, because South Korea, as it looked like at the time, it was crazy to go that attacking. And Brazil just ripped them apart, and they probably couldn't believe how much space they were getting. You know, South Korea just left themselves 1v1 sort of all over the defensive line. Don't see Croatia doing that. You know, if you think about what Croatia are likely to do, you know, probably a narrow back four, the three in midfield not going too far forward. You know, Perisic on one side, helping out his fullback, whoever plays on the right-hand side, doing likewise, really, and just making it difficult for Brazil. And we've seen them dance their way past packed defences, and we've seen them dance off the once they've scored their goals as well. But I don't see this being, you know, one of them really easy quarterfinals at all, where you get a blowout. I think that you know, this could be the last hurrah for Modric and sort of the, you know, the gang, really. And they just don't give up. They're so tough, Croatia. So I wouldn't be putting Brazil in the accumulators at 4-11. I think they'll win, but there's probably better bets to be had.
Not that this point really affects betting in any sense, but I'm going to ask you anyway, Mark. What do you make of the dancing, the celebrations? Because there are a few people say it was remarkably disrespectful.
I hadn't thought about the disrespect angle, and I don't know. I didn't feel like South Korea felt like they were being disrespected in any way. It's just Brazilian culture to do that. I mean, you know, I remember, you know, Bebeto sort of doing that baby celebration. What was that, 94 maybe, or 90? Can't remember, a long time ago now. I think it was 94. And I mean, they danced, you know, in celebration for as long as I can remember, probably a long time before that too, and for a long time afterwards. I mean, I don't see the problem with it. You know, Roy Keane and Graham Souness, very alpha male, weren't they, in the ITV studios? I mean, but they get upset about absolutely everything. No, I didn't find it disrespected, the South Koreans. It would be nice though, wouldn't it, if like Croatia score like a 90th minute winner, like, you know, Perisic starts doing the samba with Modric and the rest of them. So yeah, I mean, it's just people like to watch Brazil play. There's this great excitement about when Brazil play, and yet people moan when they do flicks, they moan when they dance. It's like, but then they also moan when they're boring, and it's not like they used to be. So I don't think Brazil can win.
Do you still have Brazil down as the favourites for the tournament?
Yes, and one of the reasons for that is the fact they got Croatia in the quarterfinals. And you know, Argentina, Netherlands looks tough to call. England, France is really difficult. Portugal against Morocco, I don't think it's going to be an absolute stroll in the park for Portugal. So, yeah, for sure, you would make Brazil favourites on the back not only of the fact that you know, they've got the best squad and they were the favourites going into it, but the draw worked out quite nicely for them. You know, absolute walkover, really, in the last 16. Neymar's back to fitness. Vinicius is looking really good on the left-hand side. Rafinha maybe not so much on the right. I wonder how long before they give Rodrigo the opportunity out there. Richarlison scoring goals, linking the play well. So, I mean, there's a lot to go for them. But I would reiterate, I don't think this is going to be an easy game against Croatia, because that's just not in Croatia's makeup to roll over.
Come on then, what's the best bet for this one?
I'm going to go for Croatia plus 1.5 goals. And that plays in, you know, maybe to everything here, where Brazil edged their way to success. Don't forget, Brazil only beat Switzerland 1-0, and Serbia was a bit of a slog as well, wasn't it, before they eventually won 2-0. And Croatia would be at least the equals of those two teams and probably better.
Okay, let's move on to Argentina, Netherlands then. It's going to be a brilliant Friday of football. This one's 7 o'clock. 6-5 Argentina, 13-5 Netherlands, 11-5 the draw. Now, Mark, we've mentioned it in all of the bets clubs leading up to the World Cup and during, that Netherlands were your kind of a pick, an outside pick for the World Cup. And last time we spoke, it was fair to say you were probably not too upbeat about their chances, but I think having watched their last performance, I'm not saying it's all rosy now, but it was certainly the Netherlands you were probably hoping for.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. It was. Yeah. And, you know, I was very worried about that game against the US. Mm. And they turned it into a stroll, I thought. And it was actually one of the best tactical performances in the World Cup that we've seen. Not as flashy as, you know, when Brazil, sambered their way past South Korea and
got control, didn't it? It was real control. Almost routine, yeah.
And, you know, this is the benefit of having a top coach in your ranks. Louis van Gaal never gets too high when they win, never gets too low when the performances, you know, aren't quite up to the level maybe that people expect. He was always very calm ahead of that US game, and the US just fell for every single trap that he set. You know, you're seeing a team that isn't giving up loads of opportunities, really. Pulisic had that one very early on, but the goal was a complete fluke that they conceded. I'm not sure how, you know, Wright could ever do that again.
I can't work out how it's gone in.
Yeah, I mean, well, he miscontrolled it. He's miscontrolled it, and it's flicked up backspin off his boot because
just
he wasn't good enough
physics
to track
it. It really does, yeah.
But, you know, apart from, you can't really defend against something like that. It's absolutely ridiculous. Midfield, I'd like to see a bit more quality from Frankie de Jong. I think he's got it in his locker and hasn't delivered consistent enough in this World Cup. But when he gets it right, he's fantastic. But just want to see more from him. The goal, the Memphis goal, was it 20-21 passes that in the lead up to it? Memphis just wasn't fit at the start of the tournament. He's now fit. Him and Gakpo up front. You don't need to do much if you've got those two up front, because they play sort of as individuals, don't they? And they can dribble past people. They can connect as well, but it just enables them to defend with a lot of numbers and then hit teams on the counter-attack. And I don't think they'll be fazed by playing Argentina. And by the way, I mean, you know, somebody says to you, like, give us a World Cup classic fixture. Argentina v Netherlands, to me, is right up there. In fact, it might even be number one in terms of, you know, just history and just what you expect of a game between these two nations. It just screams World Cup classic.
Well, you've certainly bigged it up now, Mark. Cue a 0-0 ball draw.
We had a 0-0 ball draw, didn't we? Was it World Cup semi-final? It was in 2014, wasn't it, that they had the 0-0 ball draw semi. And so it might be low scoring. In fact, I think it will be low scoring, but that just raises the tension, and there's a lot to get excited about, I think, when the tension gets high once you're at the World Cup quarterfinal stage, because a team and a nation plans like 4 years. You can't in Premier League or Champions League, there's next week or next season. It's 4 years or until the next World Cup. So once you're at this quarterfinal stage, the tension is high. And to me, that means even if you've got a boring game, because it becomes so much at stake. You know, if you think about it, the quarterfinals, I mean, if you get to a semi-final and lose, everyone can go home, head held high. You know, that's sort of where I think all these nations feel like, you know, if you get to the semis, it's not too bad. You think about England 2018. Quarterfinals, there's disappointment, isn't there, for these big nations? It doesn't feel like quite enough. And yet, for two or three of these really big ones, it's all they're going to get. So I'm not expecting many goals. I'm expecting it to be tense. And I would rather have Louis van Gaal on my side than Scaloni of Argentina, I think.
I can't wait for it. I think what you mentioned there, Mark, probably plays slightly into my next question. Argentina are third favourites to win the World Cup. They're currently 6-1, or there or thereabouts. I think it's fair to say we still haven't seen an overly convincing performance from them yet, though.
No, you said him there, didn't you? Because it's Messi's team. Like, so you kind of, it's and this
I wasn't
not,
meant to say him, but it also works.
Was it a Freudian slip? It, one of those ones where, like, Argentina, this was not supposed to be the Messi show. This was supposed to be a team effort that got the best out of Messi. Unlike in 2014, when it was basically, well, let's hope Messi gets us to a final, and he did, and then they lost the final. And, you know, they've kind of slipped back into that, haven't they? Where the team needs Messi to spark it into life, and it doesn't seem to function great when he's sort of having his quiet spells. And because of his age, he can't run around like crazy for 90 minutes. He has to pick his moments and pick his battles. And yeah, I've been underwhelmed, I think, by Argentina. The Poland game, they look good, but then France beat Poland, you know, by 2 goals. The Mexico game was a real slog for them, and until Messi smashes that one in, you didn't really create any chances. And against Australia, I felt like Australia were comfortable until Messi again danced his way through the defence. And then even late on, too much panic for my liking from Argentina. Too emotional. They've got a lot of it would be like a home game for them, you have to say that. And so that is a tick in their box. But yeah, I got a query over, they've been playing knockout football, haven't they, really, since they lost to Saudi Arabia. Every game felt like we've got to win this, we've got to win this. Netherlands have had a right old stroll up, really. I'm not sure they've sprinted once in the whole tournament so far. So that might play a part as the match wears on.
Low scoring, tense affair. What's the best bet?
I was going to go for Netherlands to qualify. Again, I couldn't put you off the draw. In fact, if you back all four draws in these quarterfinals, I don't think you'd be far behind come the end of the weekend. But I just like the fact that Netherlands have got, I think, some interesting options off the bench. Simons just showed little glimpses. Bergwijn against the tired defence might be the way to go. I don't think they've kind of got out of second gear yet. And Argentina have been full throttle since they lost to Saudi Arabia. And do you remember when they went behind against Saudi Arabia, the panic in that team? And you saw it against Australia as well. I just, you know, that would worry me, I think, ahead of what's going to be 3 big matches for them until the end of the World Cup.
Yeah, it feels like there's some unhealed trauma in there, doesn't there? Yeah. Let's take a look at the fourth quarterfinal then that we'll be previewing. Then it's on to the EFL with Dan Charles. But it's Morocco against Portugal. 11-2 Morocco, 7-10 Portugal, 11-4 the draw. This one's Saturday, 3 o'clock. Will you be watching this or Swansea against Norwich City? You decide. Portugal were fancied by a few of your Racing Post colleagues, Mark, and you can probably see why after that performance against Switzerland. Granted, Switzerland were pretty poor, but there were some really classy moments from Portugal in there.
There were. I mean, first of all, some breaking news. That 11-2 has disappeared about Morocco. There's love for the outsiders. 5-1.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, you might even struggle to get the 5-1 now, and could be 9-2 by the time this pod eventually comes out. So there is support for Morocco. I mean, in terms of Portugal, yeah, the reason I didn't like Portugal, I'm going to be just absolutely blunt about this. I didn't think the coach had the guts to drop Ronaldo.
And big call, wasn't it? Yeah.
And I didn't think they could win the World Cup carrying a passenger. And basically what he is now. And you know, as a super sub, no problem with him as long as his attitude is right. I didn't see how they could win effectively playing with 10 men. And when I saw the team come in for that game against Switzerland, I thought Ronaldo must have been injured because it was so far out of what he Fernando Santos has ever even attempted to do before. He's such a boring coach, you know, he doesn't make any big calls, and he drops Cancelo because he hasn't been playing well, and he drops Ronaldo. You're like, wow, where has this come from? And Portugal become, I think, such bigger runners for the World Cup. And it's easy to say now because they've just scored 6 against Switzerland, but even before that Switzerland game, they're just looking at the team thinking, yeah, I can see what you're trying to do here. There's better balance, you know, because Ramos gives you that threat in behind, which opens up space for Bernardo Silva and Fernandes and João Felix, who was brilliant against the Swiss as well. So, I mean, one decision, I think, has changed the whole dynamic of this Portuguese team. And you're right, was it Liam Flynn and James Milton were two that were sweet on Portugal before. They've got a nice quarterfinal that they'd expect to win. I think it'll be, again, a bit like Brazil. I think it'll be closer than the odds suggest, but you can't ask for much more than to be odds on to win a game at this stage. If they do get through semi-final against England or France, neither team's perfect. You know, I think really all you can hope for in the draw is to be away from the favourites, and the favourites are Brazil, aren't they? So, yeah, if you're on Portugal outright, I think it's time to get excited.
Let's take a look at Morocco's path to this point then. They opened up with a 0-0 draw against Croatia. They beat Belgium 2-0. They beat Canada 2-1 and then got through on penalties against Spain after a 0-0 draw. What's been their secret to their success, Mark? I don't think too many would have predicted this run.
No. I mean, I did fancy them to get out of the group, but I'd be absolutely lying to say that, you know, I saw them as quarter finalists. It was more about what I didn't like about some of the other teams in the group, with Group F, that they came through. With Belgium past their best, and you know, Canada, I always felt Canada were going to just be too gung-ho, really, for a World Cup. So I'm not amazed that they've got through. If you remember right at the start, we were on them double chance against Croatia in that opening game. And that game really has been the template for what they do. Very tight defensively. You know, you've got Amrabat that sits in front of the back four. I think he's been one of the secrets of the success. Agard and Sice, two units really at the centre half positions. Got a goalkeeper that plays high level in Bono for Sevilla. Hakimi for Paris Saint-Germain. Mazraoui for Bayern Munich. The team at the defensively is made up of some pretty big names, and you know, names that have played at a high level previously. Then you've got Buffao and Ziyech that can carry the counter-attacking threat. Both very tricky, both inconsistent, but capable on their day. So they're a good all-round unit that don't give up very many opportunities. And I saw a great stat going around that they haven't actually conceded, they've not conceded a goal. Like, no opponent has scored past them in this World Cup, because the goal that Canada got was an own goal. And even even Spain's penalties were missed or saved. So, they are a tough nut to crack. They're well organised. They are fighting for every single ball. I suppose if you're thinking about them winning a game, El Nesyri up front hasn't looked like he's going to take those chances. But the crowd, you know, I was talking about earlier on, wasn't I, about Argentina being a virtual home game. I mean, Portugal may as well be, you know, playing in Casablanca or something. This is going to be red hot atmosphere that Portugal are going to have to deal with. They've got the experience to do it, but I think it's, you know, you're going to have to work hard to beat Morocco. They're not going to just give you goals like Switzerland did. That was a crazy performance from the Swiss.
Just quickly on, you mentioned there the penalties. I think I heard a stat earlier, something like 38% or roughly that figure of penalties have been missed so far this tournament. That feels high. Any sort of science behind that, or just randomness taking play?
Yeah, I think it's just randomness, taking play. And obviously, we've had two shootouts that have not been vintage. There have been lots of drama, but in terms of the actual shots, I know that the BBC pundits were definitely not happy with that casual run. It's not a run-up, is it? The casual walk-up, and then you kind of wait for the goalkeeper and then slot them in. When they don't go in, it looks stupid. When they do go in, nobody says anything. You know, Neymar did that and scored. I mean, look at the penalty Hakimi scored against Spain. You know, so I think there's just randomness. I wouldn't put anything on it.
What's the bet for this one, Mark?
I'm going to go for no goals in the first half at 13-8. It was a very popular bet in the group stage. Then the knockouts were more goal laden, weren't they? Which was a surprise, but I see this being a bit of a throwback game, really, in World Cups where there's not many goals. Morocco, as I said, only conceded one so far. That was an own goal. Spain only had one shot on target in that game. So Morocco, very good at keeping opponents at bay. I am worried about the tiredness factor. They were picking up injuries in that Spain game, and it's a quick turnaround. So that's why I prefer to sort of back them to keep a clean sheet, if you like, for the first 45 minutes rather than beyond that. And I do weirdly wonder, having said all that I did about Cristiano Ronaldo, whether this is a game where he might be handy, because there won't be that space in behind for Ramos to run onto. And you might be better off with Ronaldo and sort of getting crosses into him, because he's still great in the air. So don't be surprised if Ronaldo has a say in this quarterfinal. And I think Portugal will edge it, but they're going to have to, they're going to be made to work, I think, by Morocco.
Well, there you go. There's your World Cup card all ticked off. There's EFL action this weekend. We'll get onto that now with Dan Childs.
And now we're joined by the Racing Post EFL expert, Dan Childs. I know it's hard to believe, isn't it, with the World Cup quarterfinals taking place this weekend, but the Championship is also back, and we've got full League One and League Two programme. But Childsy, before we talk EFL, I do need to just get your thoughts on the World Cup. I mean, I suppose, who do you think will win it at this stage? We've covered all the quarterfinals in depth, so just a quick sort of outright tip from you.
Sure, yeah. I mean, I'd say, preface it first by saying I think there's probably six of the eight teams left in it. All the teams aside, I would say, from Croatia and Morocco, that could still... You could make a strong case for any of those other six teams. But I would go for Portugal. I just think that it's kind of working out really well for them. The change that he made, bringing Ramos in for Ronaldo, seems to have... they were playing pretty well in the group stage, but they took their game. I watched the game against Switzerland, which Switzerland had shown their still stubborn opponents. You know, Brazil had to work really hard to beat them in the group stage, and they just made it look ridiculously easy, played some great football. Not really seen them play that way under Fernando Santos, very often. They look really, really slick going forward and lots of movement and still pretty good at the back. So I think they're meeting Morocco at the last time. Morocco at the right time, sorry. I think Morocco looked out on their feet, you know, players getting injured and that. The two centre-backs looked like they were injured after that game against Spain, where they disagreed. You know, so I think they've got a nice little route through now. And I think that helps, if you're then going in to play against France or England, whoever gets through that is going to have had probably a tough, tough game. So got a nice route through. I just think it could be their year.
OK. Well, now back to the more domestic matters. How many bets have you got for us this weekend?
Yeah, got the three this weekend, one from each of the EFL divisions.
OK, well, with the Championship returning, I know it was a game last week, but the full Championship returning, we'll start at the top. Then go League One, then go League Two.
Yeah, I mean, it actually involves the game that one of the teams that played last week, Millwall, at home to Wigan. I mean, Millwall last week, I watched their game at Sunderland. They lost the game 3-0, but that was a really harsh scoreline for them. They were the better team in the first half. And even by the end of the game, they had a right go second half after they fell behind. The shot count was 19-11 in their favour. And they just, you know, got punished chasing the game. But they were at it. Millwall to play, you know, a lot better than that score suggests. And I think, I mean, their home record's really strong anyway. They've won 7 of 10 home league games. And I think playing that game as well, when the other teams have had the longer break and have got, you know, come back into it after a longer break, I think that helps them against Wigan, who obviously that's their first game under Colo Touré, who's gone in there. I think he could be a good appointment for them going forward. You think of the experience he probably would have gained from playing under Arsene Wenger and working with Brendan Rodgers at Celtic and Leicester. But he's going to need some help in the January transfer window. Wigan didn't really upgrade their squad enough, I don't think, in the summer. So I think until then, they're going to probably struggle. And I think Millwall could take advantage.
Okay, and then in League One?
League One, I'm going to go with Derby. They've got a bit of a local match away to Burton. I think, but Derby at odds against to win this is a really good price. There's been a steady progression, I feel, under Paul Warren, who obviously knows the division really well. They're 10 games unbeaten in all competitions. Derby, the last two league games have been 0-0s, but they were tough games away to Portsmouth and at home to Sheffield Wednesday. They won the shot count in both of them games. So it's good signs for Derby. They need to score more goals, but you'd fancy them to get a breakthrough against Burton, who have conceded 41 league goals this season, which is the worst record in League One. They've been better, Burton, under Dino Marmria, and the centre-forward Victor Adebayo is a real threat, got 9 goals this season. But I just think Derby are much the better side, and they should, I mean, don't forget, they'll have a lot of support in this game, a local game, probably have almost half the crowd there. I fancy them to get the win.
Okay, so we've got the Lions of Millwall, the Rams of Derby. Are we going for another animal-based team in
Well, if you, I suppose you could construe that the ewes of Colchester.
I won't do. I mean, we'd be pushing it.
Pushing it with that one. But I fancy them to get some kind of result, either, you know, at least avoid defeat away to Sutton this weekend. Colchester are having a tough season. They're third from bottom in League Two, but I've noticed a big improvement the last couple of weeks. They won 3-0 at home to Doncaster, who hadn't been improving themselves under Danny Schofield. And then last week, took the lead away to Mansfield and ended up losing 2-1, conceding an injury time away to Mansfield. But the performance, by all accounts, again, was pretty good from Colchester. Not of a performance of a side that, you know, that normally it would be in the bottom three. So I think they're starting to improve, and I think they can get something at Sutton. Sutton have won one of their last 8 games. That win was when they scored direct from a corner in a 1-0 win at home to Rochdale. They're coping with a big list of long-term injuries at the moment. Still can't field two recognised centre-backs at the moment. So they've got, you know, a few problems at the moment at Sutton, and I think Colchester can take advantage and get at least a point there at Gander Green Lane.
Well, there we go. Looking forward to the return of the EFL this weekend. Dan, thanks very much, as always, for those selections. Mark and myself will be back next week. Mark, Dan, thanks very much. If you are having a bet this weekend, please remember to do so responsibly with gamble, with money that you can afford to lose. Thanks very much for listening, and we'll see you all again very soon. Bye-bye.